The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is Footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. I'm James Sharman. We have Amy Walsh, Craig Forrest, Daniele Wongerton here for you. It's match day after a two-day malaise. We're back with the first semi-final, Spain against France this afternoon. Why are you laughing?
Because we're talking as if I'm at... Yes, he used the word malaise and about the lack of games the last 2 days, and Dubs and I both went, because we're both pedants and we're judging you on your language.
It was a good one though, right? It was a good one.
It was.
It was a malaise. Yeah. We discussed it yesterday, right? What do we do? Hang out with family? What?
No, yeah, Craig brought us all down to earth. What are we going to do? Hang out with family? Loved ones?
So, Spain, France, do you guys prefer to watch matches with other people or yourself? Now, you know, it's different for me. I used to love going to bars and places to watch games and the atmosphere. And, you know, now I want to be on my couch with no one around me. I won't lie to you. That's my go-to. Even if England make the final, if they make the final on Sunday, I'm watching it by myself. Got no interest in being around anyone.
Yeah.
How about you people?
With a bunch of razor blades.
Just need one, actually.
In a bathtub. So, like, Tony and Joe aren't interested at all?
Oh, not at all. Well, Joe's not even in the country right now. But Tony has no interest. She likes, she would go to a bar to watch it. She likes that atmosphere. Mm. She likes sporting events in the social component of it.
Yep.
But she couldn't give a damn about watching it, just watching it for the sport.
That's interesting. I like both. I like watching a game within that context at a pub or a watch party and having that energy around me and yet still being able to pay attention to the game and being around people who are interested in doing both, like striking that balance where they're not chatting your ear off and they're not distracting. Right. Everybody's paying attention, but there's still that convivial atmosphere of everybody together. It's social, but we're all participating and watching the game. It's like active participation, right?
Mm. But that's hard to find though, isn't it? You do get someone that just wants to talk to you.
That's it. This is like I can make the same argument for like going to my kids' hockey or soccer or sporting events. Is like I choose the people to my left and my right wisely. And sometimes I have to get up and go to the bathroom where I don't have to go to the bathroom. I'm just moving seats because they're too yelly, they're too critical, or they're too chatty.
I stand
don't want to find out what you're doing next week. I want to watch the game.
I'm a rink stander. I stand in the corner, usually with Tony, because we'll just watch the game. And she yells and screams, but not negatively. But because I don't want to be just talking about bull crap with someone. Nothing to do with the game. I want to watch the game. Your kid's playing too. Do you not care? I don't care what you had for dinner last night or this great new restaurant has opened up. I don't care. Watch the game.
No, exactly. And then at home, there's that balance because JP, my husband, who covers hockey and covers the Habs and his job actually is involved in sport as well. He wants to watch the game as if he's an analyst, like as if he's covering it, because oftentimes the next day on radio or he's covering the next game, he has to be well informed and he doesn't want to rewatch it. It's like being efficient, making good use of your time. And then I was doing the For the Win show for One Soccer, Sharms. You and I were on the shows the last couple of or in the last week, we were on a couple of shows. We did. There was some banter. It was limited, but there was still a little bit of Footy Prime about us, right?
Which I mentioned is good. The podcast.
I know, as did I. And I'm good. Watching
those 14,
it.
Those 14 people might know now. There's a podcast.
But I'm watching it, and my daughter Evie, who is very tuned into soccer, and so is Campbell, but Evie's very chatty, asks a lot of questions. So JP will come in and be like, Evie, mama has to watch the game because she's working. So it's like putting the game in a category where the kids understand that, yes, it's for pleasure. Yes, football is always on in the house, but this particular match is being consumed for a job. So then like the kids, when it's framed that way, like they understand that you're watching it, but you're paying more attention to it because you have to talk about it. There's a difference.
You're killing sport for your children.
Maybe. I don't think so though, but like they understand though that there's a difference that you're watching it for pleasure and you're watching it because it's for your job. There's a difference in the way that you're consuming it, I think.
No, absolutely there is. Craig, how do you prefer to watch it? Can you be in a social environment and still garner enough insight from what you're watching? Or do you need a bit of a privacy?
Yeah, you can, but it's tougher for sure. Yeah, it's a different experience. But when you're by yourself watching it, yeah, I'm undecided about today's match.
Mm. Why? Whether you're going to walk out onto Queen Street and find a pub or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Well, I know that on Sunday, let's just say, and hypothetically, England get to the final of the World Cup, and I'm going to be on my couch by myself watching it. There will be a time in that game where I wish I was somewhere with beer, with fans. If they win, that's where I would probably want to be, and I'll have major FOMO for missing out on that. But if they lose, there's nowhere I'd rather be than away from other people.
Than in your basement.
With the razor blade.
And here's the problem, Charms. You wear this heavily. Sorry, Dubs. What's your joke?
I said Winnie's doing it. He's on his couch, just wearing a top and no bottoms.
That's reason enough for the razor blade.
For everyone. My eyes.
Only if there's a mirror down there. There's no mirror down there.
I was fortunate enough for the 2019 Raptors run. They were up 3-2. And my buddy Mike it was like, hey, we're invited to a bar. There were like 8 to 10 of us. And it was so much fun to be with this group of people who all loved the Raptors and love basketball. We know each other because a lot of, and it made such a difference to the viewing experience. Then again, about 3 years later, I was with Craig at the Dog and Bear. And it was a playoff game. The Raptors lost. But it was still fun because it was a different experience. We were there. We were having a couple pints. We hung out with a whole group of LGBT community. We asked some maybe personal questions. Craig got hit on about 14 times. It was so
as,
much
as one does.
With as one Forest. Does.
Yeah.
Yep. A big, tall, strapping blonde man. Yeah.
Anything on offer.
Yeah.
He didn't pronounce bald Jesus. Right. He said blonde instead of bald.
Yeah. No, he was blonde. He was a blonde. Another blonde. But it was I imagine you in a skating like at an ice rink Dubs, where people you're a bit of you've got some fame, some celebrity, and people like to sit beside you and then you going, I have explosive diarrhea. I gotta leave. Yes, I have to poo really bad. And then you just basically F off over to the corner. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
She literally just like sneaks over.
Supposed to diarrhea at all. As an excuse to get away from me. when you do that, Dubs, do you feel that you have to leave the rink? Do you have to leave the actual area? Do you feel that just for a few minutes you have to leave to fake the washroom visit?
No, I overanalyze, as you guys know, and JP will just go sit somewhere else and not give shite, right? Whereas I care about what they think about me and I want to be friendly with them and I don't want them to think I'm a snob. But really I am a snob is what it comes down to. And I often find this, but I want to ask all three of you guys because I think Footy Prime gives us a little bit of renown. People maybe know who we are in certain spaces, especially soccer. Do you find that people will sidle up to you, especially when a game is on, and they want to talk to you to showcase their knowledge of the game? Do you ever get these types of conversations? And people can be, they're lovely and I want to have a chat, but I want to turn to them and be like, I don't care how much you know or you think you know, let's just watch the game. But oftentimes it's them trying to show me how much they think they know.
Usually it's a monologue, not a conversation, I find. They'll come up and they'll say, oh yeah, blah, blah, and then boom, and I can't get a word in edgeways. I'm trying to be polite and converse with them because I am often interested in what they have to say about certain things. But when they're not listening to a word you're saying and they're just spewing stats and numbers and their thoughts and their opinion, it becomes tiring. Yeah.
And then they say, you can use that on the show.
Oh, yes, I'll be doing that. You, no, the words I love is you should have me on the podcast. I get that quite a bit. It's like, oh, right. Yeah. What's your phone number? I'll call you tomorrow morning. How about that? No chance.
No.
That's not everyone, to be clear. There are some people out there who are lovely to talk to. So please, if you like the podcast, Life Footy Prime, and you happen to, for some weird reason, recognize me, I'm open. Come talk to me. I'm happy. But just have a conversation.
Sounds like it.
Same.
Well, Craig, but
there's always one person, though, right? No matter where you are.
Yeah. No matter what.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
Craig, you'll probably recognize more than anyone because you are, you know, former Premier League footballer. You're 6'5". You stand out in a crowd. I mean, what's your average engagement?
Half Asian side man, half Asian hype man.
Always
side man, side piece, side piece,
hype man. I'd like to call him. I talk about how great he is.
Yeah, I just pass him on to Dan.
Oh, okay. Dan takes over.
No one cares about my, like, that's the great thing. Craig is always so diplomatic, and he has patience that I think many of us do not.
Well, he's been on this with us for 6 years. 7 years.
Right. That's true.
A lot of pain. He's put up with this kind of start to a show for 7 years. He's like, can we not just talk about the World Cup? We're crying out loud, guys.
No, he loves this stuff.
But deep down he's saying, guys, come on, it's time. No one cares about this. So let's talk about the game, shall we? Spain against France. It's a biggie. Mm-hmm. It's a hugie. The winner of this match will probably win the World Cup. How does Spain stop France, Craig?
Rodri. That's your answer.
One word.
One word. One name. Rodri. I think he's going to be key to that for them. But, I mean, we saw other teams that have stifled France as well. So, you know, they're not like they've run riot with everybody. So, you know, they got to feel pretty confident. 36 games unbeaten. How can he be anything but confident? Two great sides. Really difficult. I mean, I've been thinking about it. Like, it really is a fantastic semifinal matchup. It really is. And two brilliant sides, great footballers, top of the echelon of football. Like, it's as good as it gets from players. There's no weaknesses really on either side to speak of. Who's going to make the mistake? Who's going to give something up first? Hopefully, there'll be an early goal for neutrals, certainly for making a spectacle, which we've seen a lot in this tournament. So
Rodri's the solution. So, in what capacity, though? Like, how will he be that difference maker?
Say again?
Rodri, like, if he's the difference maker, in what capacity? How will he determine this result?
Well, his reading of the game and how he can just stop attacks. And I think the Spanish will do what they can to press. I think a lot of their balls that they win back is in the central position. So they can, you've seen that happen with a lot of Spanish teams going back to the great Barcelona sides that close down that space really, really quickly. And I think we'll see that. Not so much full press in their zone, but around the midway area, I think we'll see them press really, really well. And when they lose the ball, they're going to swarm France. And I think that that'll be effective to a point, of course. But and they got their weapons, of course, with Le Mans and fantastic side, good balance. But I think they can stifle France.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you talking about the counter press and how effective they are at winning the ball back, because I think their chief occupation is keeping the ball from France. And they do that very well, right? Like, they'll have control of the match by keeping possession. And then I think France will be resorted to hitting them on the break, which is where they have so much potency, so much danger, so much threat going the other way. But you talking about the counter press and how effective Spain are, especially at winning the ball back in central areas and dangerous areas, makes me think, I think it was the beginning of Evan Pellerud, so the former women's national team coach for Canada in the early 2000s and like the latter half of my career. So from 2000 to 2009, one of the first camps, I think, or tournaments that we played with Evan, so it would have been in 2000 or 2001, he showed us video, and we alluded to this the other day, about the U20 Argentine winning side, and they were masterful at the counter press. So Evan showed us video of that U20 side that included, was it Alvarez, and included Messi, maybe not Alvarez, Aguero, Messi, and like other superstars when they were just youth players. But they were so good, so effective at smothering the opponent and winning the ball back high up the pitch. So we tried to glean inspiration from that. And I think that was the beginning of really using that as a tool to try to dictate terms to an opponent, is not necessarily applying a high press, but keeping control of the game via possession. Then when you lose it, just being so ruthless in the way that you press the ball at that point. But I think it's interesting for us how you say Rodri. Obviously, when he's on the ball, he's class, he's quality, so good at dictating the game. But I think his lack of mobility might be something that France seeks to kind of sniff out and to use it to their advantage. And I think that's why you saw Ruiz go into the midfield instead of Pedri last game. So it gives them a little bit more like dynamism in the middle of the park. They have it in the wings in spades, right? With Cucurella and with Pedro Porro on the right. But I think that lends them a little bit more athleticism, a lot more mobility in the middle of the park. Because I think Ruiz manages to kind of lift Rodri up in that regard. Because not that he's leggy, he's not like a Casemiro, but he's just not kind of really adept and not quick over 1 or 2 yards. So when you look at Rabiot, you look at Kone, you saw Warren Zaire-Emery come in as a substitute last match. We hadn't seen too much of him, but he looked to lend them a little bit of punch. And then Rodri's going to have to do so much to try to stifle Olise. Right. So he's on five assists, and like he is going to be key going the other way in those passes, going quick, going vertical, and looking to really kill Spain when they're, I don't think they're going to have much opportunity on the ball.
That Olise Rodri battle is going to be where the game's won or lost, probably, isn't it?
Yeah.
Both brilliant players in their own right.
Yeah. Yeah. Rodri's probably not at 100% either, but still amazing.
He's looking like he's close though, right? I mean, he's been at this for a long time. I mean, he's not as mobile, you're right, as some other, you know, central midfielders in this World Cup, but he still breaks up a ton of plays. He reads it so well. He makes up for his lack of his so-called mobility. And I know you're not saying he's not mobile. He is immobile, but not in, in that, in this kind of game, you have to be so uber mobile.
Almost sprightly.
Sprightly almost. Almost sprightly.
Yeah.
But his IQ almost makes up for that. He thinks three steps ahead, and he's in that space. He's I don't know. It's a fascinating battle because, you know, we talk about the star names, the Yamin Lamars and the Mbappes, and obviously they're going to be key. But that's the most important area of the pitch, you would think.
Yeah, it's good as up there, isn't it? Yeah. If we look at Declan Rice or somebody like that, you know, went from West Ham to Arsenal, sort of that piece that they were missing for so long. Arsenal,
not always the sexiest position, right? Not going to score. Exactly. Although he scores big goals. I mean, he scored Champions League final goals. Yeah. They're beauties too, right? Mm-hmm. But he's not known for that. That's not what he's in the team for. He has some other players who can do that. Do you think Yamin Lamal Dubs is set for a breakout? He was much better the last game, but he's really been coming back from that hamstring injury. And you know, obviously hasn't hit the peaks that those of us that picked him to be the face of this World Cup, he hasn't quite made that just yet, but he still could.
Yeah, we should revisit all of the players that we shouted out as our potential emerging stars. I mean, he's not emerging. Yeah, exactly. That was a callback to my call here.
I had him too.
Who's going to be? Yeah, but just hasn't had the minutes right to be able to prove himself. Even though, you know, playing for PSG, obviously they think very, very highly of him. He's just going to need more minutes, and he will get it over the next cycle. But yet, to your point about Lamine Yamal, I think you looked at him coming on as a sub in that first group game. It didn't look right. And I thought, you know, have they made a mistake putting him out there this early on in a tournament? And it kind of reminded us of the way that, you know, you had to treat Alphonso Davies with kid gloves and like when was he going to see his return and all of that discussion. But I think he's shown that he's like Rodri, like following that ACL, he's, if he's not at full fitness and like full capacity, he's very, very close. So he was just missing that kind of final action, final decisiveness in the shot selection or the execution. But you saw the triangulation happening on that right-hand side in a way versus Belgium that I think you hadn't seen previously. It was Belgium they played, right?
Yeah.
So many games running together.
I was in an interview this morning and I blanked on like who any of these teams had ever played before. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Play Switzerland?
Yeah, it's so funny. And I think you saw him like kind of held or contained rather by the Belgium defender, especially. But I think like the way that it's coming together, the way that he's combining, he's not existing in isolation. And that's a very scary prospect, I think, for France, right? Because you're looking at Ding on the left-hand side as that fullback. Ding,
yeah. Yeah, everyone pronounces it differently.
Is it an accent aigu? I don't think there's an accent aigu on his last.
The same to you. It's
not very an nice. E accent going towards the right is an accent aigu, like a sharp accent. Accent so, aigu.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So if it's an E with the guy on the top of it that's going up and to the right, that would be A. It would be Zigne.
Okay.
But if it's just D-I-G-N-E, it's Zing.
Oh, I think it is just
Zing. Zing.
Can I interrupt and say this portion of Footy Prime is World Cup Watch Canada. It's also Language Arts by Amy Walsh. Brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's Game On with Tim's.
Yeah.
Dubs, you actually was on a brilliant, I'm assuming it's brilliant, is our friend Olivia Brett. He's one of our favorites. His podcast in French. Mm-hmm. So it could be terrible. I assume it's amazing. And Dubs was on it last night and we saw a clip. And you were speaking French and sounding like you knew the language.
I was a little bit rusty. I told them, I said, have
rusty,
me back to
her. As they say in French.
Rouillé. Seriously.
Oh, is it really?
Rouillé. Yeah.
Basically French is English just with a weird accent, basically.
Basically, yeah. When my daughter was two, she was very verbal and she made up a French language where she just went, and just gibberish. But she was convincing, which I think a lot of the time is what French is about. It's an attitude and you just have to embody this confidence. And so that's what I lack sometimes.
If you do that in Quebec or in French, like make up a language, but like really own it, do they like nod politely like we do?
Likely, yes.
Yes.
Hi, bonjour. Yes, they would.
Sal de main.
Yeah, but <that's
okay. laughs> not bad.
Yes,
not bad. Charms.
Yeah, pretty good. You could get around. But yeah, I think we talked about the midfield. Whoever wins that, I think that is the clear path to victory. But the battles and the channels are also going to be box office, right? Where you've got Yamal versus Zing, you've got Koundé on the other side to try to contain Kukurea, and then going the other way. Is going to be something.
This is a proper football match, isn't it, coming up?
It really
like
is.
Proper.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
So,
I just wanted to mention, too, the guy out of all of this tournament, you know, we made our picks, but the guy who stood out to me that I've loved watching that I didn't know enough about was Elise. Like, he is his spring, how he opens the like, he basically sets up Mbappe to have all this space because he's creating all these lanes and it's incredible to watch. And I was just like, his touch is so deft. It's really, and like seeing, and I have like, there's so many great players to look at, but he's one of the guys that I went, oh, I didn't know how good he was, or I should have known how good he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at Crystal Palace, he was a good player and he got a big move to Bayern Munich. Now, I don't watch that much German football, but this past year, I did a few shows, the one soccer, Bundesliga, Bayern Munich games. So obviously did a deep dive into Bayern and their season and realizing how important Elise is. And then watching him play in those matches, like he's world-class. He's one of the top players in world football right now. That's how good he is. And he may not get the branding as a Mbappe or a Dembele perhaps, but it's coming because that's the kind of footballer he is. And a World Cup to his name, where he might be the most important player on that French side. He could still win the golden. Is it the golden golden ball?
Ball.
Best player. Mm-hmm. Golden ball.
Golden
yeah.
Golden ball. Yeah, like Forrest.
I got the golden ball.
I think if he gets a couple more assists.
That's what Craig calls his last ball, last and only ball. It's golden. Stay.
If he gets another assist in this type of fixture, in this scale, and like how much meaning this World Cup and this semifinal holds and the opponent they're up against, if he's able to be as influential and it's by way of another assist, or he's able to score, which obviously, Sharms, to your point, we've seen him do for Bayern Munich, right? And then he's also not playing off the right wing and cutting inside on that left foot. Like he's playing more in the middle of the park. And I think you've seen Deschamps relax a little bit and say to Elise, handbrake off, just you have freedom in here. And I think it's seen the French attack, especially in open play, be unleashed, right? And I want to go back. I want to keep talking about Elise, because I do think like golden ball is his if he's able to get a goal or he's able to contribute like in the way of offense in this game, get on the score sheet.
Sorry, Debs, not to be a dick, but what's the golden ball award for?
Best player.
Best player overall tournament.
Yep, mark it 24-49. I don't think you're allowed to say that, are you?
What? Dick?
Yeah, there we go. There
Richard?
Again.
You could be like Richard, sure.
Okay.
My dad's Dick.
Yeah,
he is. Goes by Dick.
Proper Dicky. Dick.
Yeah,
he's a proper Dick.
But we moved off of Lamine Yamal, and I just want to say, like, I think he's really close to finding that edge, to finding that bite. In that right channel. So I think it's going to be something that France is going to have to contain. They're going to need help because Porro gets up, and that's where Rodri is also as important to come back to that discussion, is when you have those fullbacks flying high, he's the linchpin. He's the cover. He's the anchor point of everything there, not only in the way that they're possessing and changing the point of attack and retaining that and retaining the ball, but just in the cover. And seeing what's happening. And then to the earlier point about Forrest, about his vision and his footballing IQ, when you launch yourself forward there, you don't have to worry necessarily about being outplayed and being beaten on one single pass because you know a guy like Rodri is right there and is covering you. And then you can just get on your bike and get back to help. He's going to have it quite literally covered. But Lamine Yamal, they're going to have to, you know, the alarm bells are going to be ringing in the way that he's combining, in the way that he's cutting in. We saw him maneuver and have that quickness and how lethal he can be off that right flank versus Belgium. And I think he's just missing that final action. I think we're going to see it in this France contest.
The top three players with most passes in this World Cup are Spaniards. Rodri leads all players with 629 passes up on Poe, Kubarsi, and Aymeric Laporte. So the top three, that just shows the possession football that they play right now. 94% possession, accuracy for Rodri, leading the league, leading the tournament in touches, passes. Just incredible. Look at some other stats. You're trying to find some of the mall here. I mean, you go through this FIFA app, it's actually pretty good once you get through all the nonsense.
I was wondering with the Yamal stuff, he was Sharms. Remember, we were covering Euro with we were doing a watch party, and Yamal was coming out. It was his coming out party.
Yeah, 100%.
And there's a lack of surprise now because he is such a great player. And I was wondering with Dubs and Craig, when you know that you're a player that needs, or when you're creating a game plan, and now you're playing against someone who's so talented, but also hasn't really shown what he's fully capable of. How does that change your game plan? Do you treat it the same? Like it's kind of almost the Alphonso Davies, how Qatar overplayed him. Mm. Have we are looking for Yamal to kind of come out of his injury and maybe show that final, hey, I'm the star of here, but he hasn't yet really. And it's also because he's not surprising people anymore, right? Like, he's not a surprise. So how do you build a game plan against a guy who is not where he's supposed to be but could still surprise you, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I would expect that they'll treat him like he's in his absolute prime form.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be isolated one-on-one with Lamal. So they'll definitely have a game plan that they'll make sure that they're double teaming them at least. But that's the same with everywhere. I don't think you'll see that anywhere else on the field. I think you'll see when the Spanish lose the ball, they'll swarm because they'll probably have three players within 10 yards proximity of the ball and they'll win it back as quickly as they possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like ignore him or underplay him. Don't pay attention to him at your peril. Mm-hmm. You don't want that to come back and bite you. So of course he's part of France's game plan. He has to be.
He's just turned 19, like I think this past week, mm-hmm. is he not? So he's not that sprightly young kid anymore.
Mm-hmm. Just but speaking of another 19-year-old, and we're talking about emerging stars, how about Cubarsí?
Yeah. You saw the stats there, right?
Yeah. What a player.
Another one. I mean, this pipeline of talent that Spain has been producing since, well, for a long time, really. But really, let's go back to 2008. When they, off the back of that, those brilliant Barcelona teams, they won Euro, then won the World Cup, and then won Euro. And by the time the second World Cup came around, they were getting the Puyols of the world and Piqués of the world were getting a little bit older, still dominant, and then had a bit of a lull by their standards, right, after 2012. Mm-hmm. But the engine, the machine, the factory was still churning out talent. And now we see the Nico Williams, the Cubarsís, the Yamals, this new generation who could be a dynasty. They could win this thing and get their first World Cup, like when Mbappe got his first World Cup in 2018. How many more are on the way? How many more World Cups will these two share over the next 12 years? I don't see another team close to them as far as talent.
Yeah,
young good talent.
Point. Good point. I mean, it doesn't always add up to win, especially in tournament football with single game knockouts. You have to put a string of games together, but yeah. We could see these two pound it out for the next few World Cups.
Well, France, let's say France, they won 2018. They won the World Cup. They got to the final in 2022. Say they lose today. They got to a semi-final in 2026. I mean, what a storied, incredible era. Can't call it a dynasty, though. Haven't got a European Cup in there. Almost underperformed with that talent.
Yep, it's true.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane, right?
But back to our previous discussion, it's the absolutely stroke of genius. It's the move by Deschamps to move Olise underneath that front line, which strikes fear in every opponent. But it almost needed a different element for it to fully come to life. Mm-hmm. And that's been the difference.
You know why? So in France, Deschamps has been criticized over the years for not getting the most out of this team because they've been very pragmatic up until this World Cup. Very pragmatic and almost negative in big games when you have this array of attacking talent. And now he's on the way out. He says, this is my last World Cup. I'm leaving. Zizou's taking over after this World Cup. It's my last chance to establish my legacy. I've got a cup. I'm going to win it now the right way and just throw everyone forward. I'm going to put Michael Olise in that little hole right there. He's going to make it knit that front three all together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I love that. You do wonder how he assessed that and done it a little bit earlier. Would they have more than the one World Cup to show for it? The one World Cup. How stupid does that sound?
Yeah, right? It really does.
It does. But you know what I'm saying, though?
I'm glad you called yourself on it because I was about to.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like they're so good. You want to see more than one World Cup or a European Championship sprinkled in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
More tournaments.
You often.
You FIFA, you've heard James Sharman say it. He wants more World Cups.
More football.
Round of 128 teams. He wants more World Cups. Start World Cup 2030 tomorrow.
But like Craig said, man, it's hard to win these things. Yeah. It's coming, yeah. Infantino said this past week, we are looking into a 64-team World Cup, Craig, which means what? It means that we're going to a 64-team World Cup, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as clunky.
Not as clunky.
That's why
they're doing it. 64-team World Cup.
Yeah.
Round of 32.
You know what, though? What it does do is that there used to be a lot of emphasis and excitement around qualifying. Certainly for the true football fan, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's going to, you know.
Good point. Yeah, good point.
It's going to be wallpaper, really.
Qualifying is great.
Yeah.
But is it as important as the actual tournament itself? I mean, 64 teams, we've got 48 and it's been, what, 6 weeks? About 6 weeks, give or take. Are we talking 2 months for a World Cup?
Jeez. Footy Prime will be exhausted.
104 matches, right? We add the round of 32. I feel like when what I've read about it, if you jumped already in the next cycle to a 64-team World Cup, that I don't think there would be that much more matches. Like, I don't think there would be a ton more matches.
Well, there's 48 to 64, right? So that's 16 more teams.
Yeah.
That's four more groups.
Or maybe it was like the duration. It wouldn't be prolonged much longer than okay. it has been now for the 48-team World Cup. Maybe like that makes sense.
It's an extra week, Dubs, kind of thing.
But more games per day, though.
Sure, yeah.
And that's what it's not so much the World Cup is. It's those early stages when you got four games a day. Imagine throwing an extra game in there, five or six games a day. I mean, holy crap, that's going to be arduous.
Except
for even the biggest fan.
Craig and I have been, and Dubs is going to be familiar with us because it's the NCAA. We've been doing March Madness, but they went up to 68 team Sharms. So they
really
they the have a play in. Yeah, they play. Okay. They have a play in for four final spots, and they said so they play Tuesday and I think it's Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the tournament starts Thursday. And these teams are like bubble teams who are now in the tournament. So it's a 64 team, and those first 2 days or first 4 days, you are just watching basketball from noon until 1 in the morning. And I'm just going to name off. So if there were 64 teams this year, here's what the teams that we would have seen also. Italy, from Europe. Sorry, that was going well. Italy.
Assuming Europe get more.
Yeah, players. Yeah. This is how it would have laid out. Italy, which we all know was missed this year. Poland, Ukraine, Denmark, or Wales. From Africa, Nigeria, Cameroon, Mali, or Burkina Faso. And Americas would be Chile, Jamaica, Suriname, Honduras, or Venezuela. And then Asia and Oceania, Oman, UAE, Bahrain, New Caledonia. So it's interesting. There's some huge names.
Yeah.
Like 10 out of those 16 teams, maybe 12, have been in the World Cup before. And have done well in the World Cup before. And so it's not like, you know, we were
worried
about...
quality wouldn't be hurt so much, would it?
Pardon me?
The quality wouldn't be hurt.
Well, this is my point. We all thought, didn't we all think, oh, it's going to be, every game's going to be a 5-0 game. And
Dr. Congo, really?
A lack of jeopardy, right, in the group stages. Yes. And I think overwhelmingly we didn't see that. And I just want to add, if a 64-team format was approved, this is from a Sportsnet article just for you, Sharms, it would have 128 total matches, 24 more than the 104 at this year's World Cup. So it wouldn't be that bloated. I mean, after just navigating this one, it was a lot of games, but I think it was manageable.
Well, they've been doing 3 or 4 games per day at the beginning. So 24, that's 6 more days. So it's an extra add a week. Like, let's say they're treating it the same way. 4 games per day in the early rounds. That's, you know, that's 6 days, 24 games.
I guess more rest for the players, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I feel that I have to hate it because I just feel that I have to hate it.
Yeah, that's my first instinct as well, to be like, oh, I'll roll my eyes and shake my fist at FIFA and bemoan, you know, corruption and everything for the sake of the almighty dollar. But then, like, I've been seeing some memes and I also agree with it, especially looking at the storylines. And I think the heartbeat of this World Cup, a team like Cabo Verde and all the great storylines that came out of it, we wouldn't have seen that at a 32-team World Cup, right? So, like, the memes that I'm seeing is like somebody's like a straight line face emoji or like rolling their eyes or like, oh, FIFA going to 64 teams. And then like the next image is like also me cheering on Cabo Verde versus Vatican City. Like, Vatican
City. Well, you mentioned bemoan there. Bemoan would do really well, I think, if they got the opportunity.
Yeah, they still have to get through qualifying.
But if we're talking Canada Dubs, 64 teams, investment, more talk of, you know, a national summer sport that we really lean into. I saw that Cathal Kelly article in the Globe and Mail.
Have you read it yet? I haven't read it yet. I want to read it.
I know. I just read, but I
you saw the headline. Okay. Before we start judging, I know Cathal, and I was like, oh, what's Cathal done now?
Right. So anyways,
go ahead.
If you can read it, because it would be a great take for people who are new to this sport, right? This is, and I'm still relatively new, but
Northern Super League just got $30 million in investment. That was on the broadcast. If you haven't had a chance, go and listen to that podcast with Dubs hosting with Shireen and Signia. But there's this opportunity where there is a ecosystem where, I don't want to sound like a dick again, but Gianni Infantino and his hugely crazy ways of building soccer is actually going to help in other countries and Canada domestically and the US domestically, where it actually builds soccer infrastructure, builds superstructure, economies, and markets, which then enhance opportunity. And I don't want to, like, I'm not trying to say, Gianni, you're killing it, because he's, but at the same time, you're like, it's
killing it.
Two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
As we've said before, right? You're like,
yeah.
He's built it up into such a way that it enhances, and there's this overflow, right? And it's helping football across the world on the women's game, on the men's game, development, growing up, youth game. And you're just kind of going, oh, I hope this doesn't work, but it is working, and I'm happy that it's working. It's a strange place.
Like the legacy funding from co-hosting this World Cup, like we haven't really developed, or we're not going to be developing infrastructure that's going to change the game for the better in this country. And I just want to add to what you said, Wonger, about the $30 million investment from the Apex agency is absolutely, it's integral to this league and NSL and growing in year two. And then it was just announced today that the seventh club to join NSL is Winnipeg. And that's spearheaded, co-founded by Desi Scott, former national team player and gold medal winning, multiple Olympic medal winning player, the Destroyer, partnering with Rob Gale, the former coach of Valor. And
Robson Gold, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So they're apparently in discussions right now, hiring a president and establishing roots there. And I think there have been previous articles about infrastructure and refurbishing, you know, fields in Winnipeg so that it could house the next NSL franchise, which is great.
It's a gamble though, isn't it, Dubs? The CPL tried it, didn't work.
Yeah, but I think that was ownership that maybe didn't fully believe in soccer. So I think now you've got the ownership there that believes it. And yes, it's still going to be a challenge. I think anything in this country with the geography, with the lack of corporate investment, is always going to be a challenge. But I think you've got the right people there to lead it. So hopefully it gets off the ground and it sees a long-term investment and longevity in the league.
Yeah, they need a nice little facility. Can't be playing in that stadium where the CPL was.
Can the CPL and the NSL owners please get in a room together? Please figure this stuff out. Dubs, let's remove all the egos and all that's transpired in the past. Remove all that. It just makes sense. Does it not? Yeah. You want facilities and stadiums and you have two professional teams in the same city? Hello? You can share.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you're seeing with Supra, the FC Supra of CPL, who just joined the Montreal franchise. They're playing out of Stade Boreal in Laval, which is just north of Montreal. So they're hand in hand. They've partnered with the Roses. So they're onto something there.
Yes,
they can. Yep.
Just it's been, I know in the past, there's just too many egos involved. I just hope that you know, rationale is what is the end result here, because it just makes sense.
We're a country full of compromise, Sharms? And we need to compromise.
In this case, please compromise. Please figure it out. Right? Sorry, the headline to that Globe and Mail article by Carl Kelly, and this is just from Twitter. I haven't read it yet, but
is
forever
Cahal?
Training.
Cahal? Cahal? Yeah. I always thought it was Cathal.
No, it's a silent. Cahal or Cahal. Cahal.
Really?
It says, forever trailing in European soccer's wake. Canada should just stick to hockey. But no, again, it's a headline. Just read it first, because Carl's a very, very good writer. And he does like to poke the bear sometimes, and he does upset a lot of people. It's what makes a great writer. Before we start casting stones towards Carl's way, let's read this column, okay? Okay? So wipe that look off your face, Dubs.
I can't.
Dubs is part of the problem. Dubs is part of the problem, because she's also a hockey family. So yeah, she doesn't know what to, how to pull.
What? No, I don't, no matter what is written in the article, and I'll give it a chance and I will read it with an open mind. I hate that title. Why?
Oh, yeah. I know. Well, because we're going to read it, aren't we?
Clickbait, Dubs.
Yeah. So I have a very difficult time with that.
Kicking and screaming. Kicking and screaming.
The arguments we have regarding the thumbnails on our little show here with Dubs. I can't do that. Yes, you can.
Yes,
yes, you can.
Hey, Dubs, you got an email, actually. We got an email from a viewer / listener a while back. Let's get a couple of these. This is really, I think, some interesting. I get this from quite a few people, actually, some of these questions. So maybe you want to touch on some of this?
Okay, so I thought we were gonna still talk about the match, but I think that we've
it's 45 minutes in. Like, we're worried about content today. Remember?
Okay, let me see if I can summarize this. This is from Michael, right? Michael via our Footy Prime email. So to the Footy Prime crew, I've been a longtime YouTube viewer, and a lead up to the World Cup, I've pivoted to the podcast where I was delighted to discover more content. Yeah. So anybody who's just consuming us on YouTube, come to the audio platforms and it's much more in depth. And sometimes more wandering, more tangents, but it's very polarizing. You either love it or you hate it. So Michael continues, I'm a big fan of the show. You guys have been on a roll. I don't always agree with your points, but your analysis and insights are appreciated. Okay. So he said, though you've touched a little on it over the past few weeks, I'd like to hear more about the quote behind the scenes and your interactions with traditional media. So the first question, Forrest, so he wants to know, here, how the sausage gets made. So we can play along. So Craigor, this is for you. What do you need to do to prepare for live game coverage? What's the pronunciation guide like? Do you have access to different camera angles from the regular television feed? And can you access your own replays?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Yeah, well, pronunciation guides are basically every team will stand in front of a camera with a piece of paper with their name on it, and they'll pronounce their names. The trouble is with that is some of the teams are like, in 5 seconds, you get six players. So it's bang, 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 bang. And you're just like, what? Rewind. What did he say? Because with their accents, their names can sound considerably different.
Yeah.
So you're playing with that all the time. And then you get to a point where, okay, you're happy with pronunciations. As far as cameras go, no, what we see on our monitors is what the world feed will see. If I wanted something to look at specifically, some broadcasts and directors and assistant directors and producers will be able to do that for you. At the World Cup, that wasn't so much the case. They got a million things going on. They had 35 cameras that they're dealing with. So they're popping in all these different angles. VAR is looking at different angles that they have. And they have, like I said, 35 of them, if you include the helicopter and drone. It's incredible the amount of that goes into it. But no, we don't get our own replays, and we see basically what we see on the pitch and then what we see on the monitor. If we have suggestions that they maybe missed something, we could throw that to them and help out them as well, the director. But these directors are spot on. They pretty much got everything pretty neat.
How do you have your headphones on, right? How do you converse with them? How do you have that conversation with them when, is it a one way conversation or is it a two way?
It's a two way. We both me and David Stowell like to have the communications open. So we were happy to listen to the director cutting cameras, camera one, camera 30, we were happy with that to be able to hear, because sometimes if you're going to ask for something, if they're in chaos, like, you know, camera seven, you're overexposed, back to one, back to two, back to like all this, seven, you're still overexposed, like all this sort of things going on.
Bad day for camera seven.
Yeah, right. So that you might not want to interrupt if they're trying to figure something out. And it's nice to know when you get a feel with that. But you have to be comfortable with hearing all that noise in your ear while you're doing it. Now, David Stowell made a really good point early on before we started, and he said, "Have you ever used the lip mics?" And that's like the old BBC one where you've got basically a little lip mic that sits on your lip and is perfectly gapped between your audio. And it's like, oh, hello from London. This is BBC reporting. So he suggested that. And the reason being is he said, we haven't worked together with the headsets and the microphones on. You can easily talk over each other because you don't know what the person's natural ins and outs are, or as he does in, with myself. So by using a lip mic, so you have the headset on, the other microphone popped over your head. You're just using the lip mic. Well, when he finishes something, he pulls away. Well, then I can tell that that's the in. Or if I'm got something to say, you can see that I've moved the mic to my lip and, you know, I want to say something. So he can then set me up. So that worked really, really well. And so well that I think that it's surprising me more people don't do that, especially when you're working in a tandem. He said, when you're by yourself and he does lots of tournaments by himself, he'll use just the headset with a microphone because that makes sense. But with another person, a co-commentator, I thought the lip mics were really well. Certainly different for us.
I'm on Amazon right now, guys. Don't worry. Trying to find lip mics for podcasts.
For Jimmy or for you?
Jimmy. Well, for all of us, but especially Jimmy, actually. But for all of us.
I don't think they're cheap. I think they're actually made in England. And yeah, they're probably like £600 a piece or something.
Probably.
Yeah. That's so important for us, especially when you haven't worked with somebody before, because there's a lot of sussing out and figuring out the commentators, the play-by-play person's rhythm and where you fit in as the analyst, right?
Yeah.
I remember coming from radio where I started, and there's a lot of great things. It's almost like a baptism by fire because so much stuff goes wrong all the time. So it's a great place to kind of get you know, your feet underneath you in broadcasting and then move to TV because something happens. I remember when I was covering the Women's World Cup, I showed up and I saw Luke Weilman, who I was calling the Canada games with. He's the play-by-play guy in a suit or like in a jacket. I was like, why are you fancy? We're just going into booths. And he's like, oh, they don't have the world feed. We might need to be on the desk. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I didn't panic because it's just like, oh, this is kind of normal in radio. But like my first ever time doing analysis on a TV game for TSN was at the Women's World Cup. And I had all of Luke's, like the stats person, in my ears during the game. And I just assumed that was normal for calling color on TV or calling a game on TV. And I only found out after the fact, when it came up in casual conversation, that was not in fact normal. And I found it very difficult to find the spaces where to go in because there were no spaces. There was no dead air. There were no gaps because the stats guy was forever feeding Luke stuff. And so then they're like, oh my God, why didn't you flag that? And I was like, cause I didn't know any different. I just assumed that's the way it worked on TV. But anyway, all that to say, Forrest, I wanted to say, Sharm said that I was on Ollie Brett's podcast with Fred Law, who's been a longtime voice of CF Montreal here in Quebec, and it's called Plenac. So anybody who knows French and is comfortable with it, go and follow them because they're two brilliant guys. But the first thing that Ollie said to me, because he's been covering games as a host, but then also as a play-by-play guy, he was in Houston with Patrice Bernier for RDS. And oftentimes during the games, he had you in his ear. For like you covered seven games and he was just so effusive in his praise of you and just said, we've talked about it a lot, like how good you were, but like, I'm hearing it from all kinds of people, whether they're pros or laymen or people on the street, like how great is Craig Forrest on the call? So bravo again.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
And here's the thing, Craig, you know, we talk about this, but this could be like, I know you never did a play by play before in color. So this could be like a new.
Well, I did, just not for the World Cup.
Oh, you did. That's right.
It's been for a few years. Hundreds of games. Hundreds of games.
This is the thing, too. I think people are thinking it's your first time at it.
There'd be last night Sportsnet, we found that. Hey, Craig, last night Sportsnet, people say, hey, Craig, I love hearing you on the call. You did a great job, you know. Like, was it? How do you find it? And he's like, well, I have kind of done it for a really 25 years.
You should
years.
Go in the archives at Sportsnet.
At Sportsnet.
There's digital tape of me doing this.
And Forrest used to call Canadian women's national team games. Like Forrest was on the call with Jerry Dobson when I was playing. Like that's how long Forrest has been doing
A long time ago.
It's a long time ago.
Don't look at those tapes because he was very critical of your play.
That's okay. That's fair.
It's interesting what you say, Dubs, about the stats and stuff like that, because we did have the option for this stats guy who is in Dallas. A lot of that, all the stuff is running out of Dallas. Replays are run out of Dallas. Audio run out of Dallas. VAR of Dallas in their hub there, which I thought was going to be right next to the stadium in Dallas, but apparently it's like a half an hour away. So anybody involved isn't even getting close to the football games, you know. As
it's
well
in a
as
moving
like,
unmarked white van, so they don't get targeted by anybody.
Yeah, yeah. So Dave liked the fact that we would have an open line on the computer that would the stats would be coming down on there. So coming down in front of us, you know, some really good information. And all stats guys aren't equal, but these guys that were involved with the World Cup were bang on as far as. Stats go. And then as far as protocol goes, there's a certain protocol about going into the game. Dave's got his opening, they got the scenics, they got all this. And, you know, then they bring me into it or whoever's with the co-commentator for a comment. Then you're getting counted down because there's ceremonies and different things and different cuts and ins and outs and all those. And then as for goal calls, you got to make sure that you're not talking anywhere near a chance. Like, as a color guy, because it's so important. FIFA and just in general leagues want the commentator on the call. That is the money shot. Yeah. And they want it clear and concise. Then what they'll do, we did certainly, was when he would then, he would set me up after doing his bit, letting it breathe. And they got lots of camera shots, beautiful visuals. You don't need to talk over that. Let the fans and all that and the celebrations go on. And then he would then set me up into the replay. And you pretty much knew that was coming just about every time, because you get sort of used to the TV crew that you're working with, because everybody can be slightly different. But we had a Dutch crew for all seven games that traveled with us.
And I did find what I do find interesting about the FIFA call, though, Craig, and I'm surprised by this. I haven't seen a lot of what they call bugs, like basically chyrons putting up saying who is actually calling the matches. I don't remember. I remember it was I think it was either Luke, but it was a TSN match where they threw and said, and former, you know, Hall of Famer Craig Forrest calling the game, and like back to Craig. And it was obviously Craig and Dave who were doing it. Dave Stoll, who was our buddy from England. But I didn't see a lot of chyrons saying Craig Forrest, Dave Stoll, you know, that kind of thing. So you don't know who's calling the game. And I guess that's the way they want it. But at the same time, I like to know who to, like, someone was calling the game the other day, Dubs, and you put something on and I was feeling the exact same way. Mm-hmm. And there were so like many matches.
Nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, it was like, I'm not cool. This does not sound great. And it was just, there was no chemistry between the two guys calling it. And it was just interesting to me because I was going to say the same thing, but I didn't want to be like Sharms. And, but it was one of those things that I was thinking the exact same thing when you put the it up in our dark web, Dubs, that, man, I wasn't feeling this call.
Yeah.
And it
took you out of the game. I found them distracting. Yes.
I found it distracting.
They've made a point this World Cup, because of where it is, to throw a lot of ex-US internationals into that booth who haven't got that much experience, clearly, in that job. And I think it's unfair and it's disingenuous. That said, overall, I mean, the broadcasts have been fantastic.
Yeah, agreed.
Like Craig mentioned there. I mean, what, 30-odd cameras, that's incredible. And they do paint this beautiful picture. And it's just done differently to perhaps the way we do things in North America, the way we do sports. It's a little bit different. You know, it's wall-to-wall voice over here, over there. They'll let things breathe a little bit, let the fans take over. Different sports, right? And, you know, soccer's a different pace to hockey, for example, right? So I'm not saying one's right, one's not right, but it's just overall, I think it's been, once again, a demonstration of how FIFA's broadcasts are top quality.
Yeah, and the pictures do speak from themselves. Is you're not doing radio as such, right? So it is different. But yeah, they usually just out of the gates, they'll say who's actually doing the commentating. Mm. But yeah, it would be good actually, because I'm listening to other people, and you know, it's nice to know. But they've sort of made that decision that they would just keep going with that.
On that note, Amy Walsh, Dan Wong, Craig Forrest, James Sharman here on Footy Prime and here on Sirius XM World Daily. We're out of time again. Dubs and I were talking about 7 o'clock this morning through the dark web panicking. What the hell do we do for an hour-long show today? And we're so concerned, we've got four segments here, Dubs, we haven't touched. Okay, so we'll push them down the road a little bit for our next shows. And there will be another one tomorrow. We'll break down Spain, France, and look ahead to England, Argentina. Thanks so much, everyone. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Legendary.
Cheers for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
I love that.
How do you guys see this one going?
France,
Spain. Yeah.
Oh. Well, we might as well keep recording.
I think
I got Spain winning just because I tipped at the start of the tournament. But who the hell knows? 2-1. 2-1 Spain, but
we got the England score, by the way, in the quarters. Hey?
I know we did. Yeah,
we did. Yes.
I think it's going to be France today. I think France. Yeah, I just think they're just.
I think it's going to be goals. I think 3-2 France.
Really,
Gregor?
I'm going France. That's who I had at the start of the tournament. So
yeah, same.
Stick with that.
Awesome.